Hello, good evening, and welcome to Seascapes. On tonight's programme, I'll be speaking to the newly crowned Irish Sailor of the Year, Paul O'Higgins, and we'll hear how the coronavirus is affecting the shipping industry worldwide. Last weekend saw the annual Irish Sailing Awards going ahead through a virtual ceremony. There were several categories, and the top award of the night, the Afloat magazine Irish Sailor of the Year, went to Paul O'Higgins. Most people will have heard Paul O'Higgins' name in another context, because, as well as being a sailor, he's also one of the country's most renowned barristers and his senior counsel. I met him yesterday for an interview I know you're going to enjoy, and I first congratulated him on being made Sailor of the Year.
It's an unexpected honour from my point of view, and I have to say that looking at some previous winners, Annalise Murphy and so on, I am immensely surprised that I could ever be bracketed with them in any category, and I'm sure I don't fully deserve to be, but maybe it just shows the diversity of sailing and the number of different things which can be done there, which range all the way from the magnificent athleticism of what she was doing to the fun which we have a lot of the time as a crew on the boat who hopefully do things reasonably well too.
Now, you mentioned that it's fun in your daily life. You're a very respected lawyer, senior counsel, very serious, responsible job, but sailing is your downtime.
Yeah, hugely so, and it's a wonderful sport for giving you a sense of otherworldliness. You're away from everything that jogs you in ordinary life, and somehow time spent on the water doesn't seem to count for time spent on land. You get a huge sense of detachment and relief from the cares. You aren't out there for 10 or 15 minutes before you're focused on something completely different.
Because I always think when you get on the boat and you've dropped the mooring and sail out, you can feel the tension just flowing away, and you're only then thinking about the task in hand. There's nothing else on your mind.
I absolutely agree. I've thought that for years and I've felt that for years. There's a great sense of freedom to do what you want, go where you want, and as you say, it just takes your mind completely off what other cares and troubles you may have. It's just a wonderful relaxation and a very, very satisfying competitive sport.
The boats you've had, they are very well known on the circuit, but all of them are called Rockabill. Where does that come from?
That comes from the fact that my father-in-law came from Skerries. He was a fanatical devotee of Skerries and Commodore of the Sailing Club there. And he taught very little of Southside sailors. And Southside sailors could mean anything from Howth southwards. Skerries was where it was at, and Rockabill, of course, is a bird sanctuary and lighthouse just off Skerries. And in 1981, he bought a boat which he had always wanted to call after Skerries. He had some difficulty in calling early ones that, and he called that Rockabill. Two boats later, I shared a boat with him, which I bought him out of, but the idea that I would have been permitted in any social sense to change the name of the boat was unthinkable. So since then, all the boats I've had have been Rockabill, just as his last three were.
And these boats, they're not huge, but they're relatively sizable. How many crew do you need to go racing, and how do you get those people?
What could they call IRC number on our boat is 8. That's kind of standard crew if you're inshore racing with a large crew. They can be sailed single-handed or double-handed. The particular boats were specially built to be sailed in single or double-handed races across the Atlantic as one of their big priorities, but they've also been sailed with full crews to win the fastness race overall, to win their class and be second overall in the Sydney Hobart, and races like that. In inshore races, you really want 7 or 8 people ideally, because you've much more rapid manoeuvring and it's necessary to be able to deal with the boat in much quicker fashion round marks and on shorter legs and in closer proximity to other boats. So anything between perhaps 7 in those circumstances, and you could take maybe up to 10 or 11 in heavy weather.
It's my theory that the more successful you are, the easier it is to attract crew.
There's no question about that. There's nothing more miserable than going out for what's meant to be an enjoyable sail on someone's boat and finding that the thing is all over the place from beginning to end, sails getting stuck in, tracks going up, ropes getting tangled round other ropes, general chaos, argument as things move gradually towards the back of the fleet or behind it, people shouting at one another, and people doing things which they don't generally know what to do. But it's not just that, because even if you do know what to do, as anyone who does it regularly knows, racing, sailing, and even sailing otherwise, is a team occupation, and you can do your own thing perfectly, but if it's not timed properly with what someone else is doing, then that is the recipe for disaster. And there's nothing more miserable on the boat than disaster, coming ashore afterwards and feeling that you're perhaps a figure of a little fun rather than admiration, and attempting to suppress the furies which are gradually pointing the finger of blame in different directions around the boat. So, of course, it's great if you are bringing along new crew at a given time to introduce them as one member or two members in a team that's already working, and that, I think, makes things infinitely more enjoyable for everyone. And then you learn from other people, and you can always learn, no matter how elevated, and I'm not talking about yourself, you may think you are as a professional sailor, doing it with other people is something that teaches you something every time you go out. Yeah. And that progression drives people on to better things.
You campaigned the boat very seriously. For example, last year, what did you compete in last year?
The beginning and end, so to speak, with one exception of the year, was in what's called the Isora series, the Irish Sea Offshore Racing Association series, which goes on through about 12 races of various and varying importance from the very beginning of the year almost to the end. So our first race, a freezing race over to Holyhead sometime in early May, was our first race. We were lucky enough to win that, and it kicked off the series and the year very well. We'd relatively less experienced crew on the race, and they weren't very large in numbers. We'd a bit of seasickness there because it was really, really cold, and if you get really cold, then people are more likely to get seasick. Fortunately, it's something I've never done, but it's something that can affect good sailors and bad sailors.
I saw the races. They had died a death really about 10 years ago, but they've made a comeback. What else did you race in? You did the Dunnery Dingle.
The next thing we raced in, which was our main inshore series of the year, was what's called the IRC Championships, the main inshore racing championships. And by a combination of luck and judgment, we managed to win that against some very, very, very stiff competition. We were favoured by one or two mistakes by some of the most formidable competition, but we managed to hold our own as well. So that was a great kickoff, because that's an area in which our boat doesn't maybe shine absolutely as brightly as it does offshore, but she's well able to compete in that. But that was a big plus from our point of view, and a big contributor to our getting Boat of the Year as a boat, IRC Boat of the Year, where it kind of flipped the season from our point of view. And the next big race after that was the Dunleary Jingle race, which was in a non-round Ireland year, the longest Irish offshore race. And for its last two runnings, which were very different from one another, we've been lucky enough to win each of the races overall. as I say, they were very different from one another. In 2017, the first of the two races, we had a brutal race, which ended up with about a quarter of the fleet managing to get to Dingle against very, very strong headwinds and horrible weather. This year, the race was a much quicker race, which had, I suppose, the least favourable conditions between the Fastnet and the Skelligs, which was late night, beat our going into the night in fairly big seas. But on each occasion, we managed to finish the John Leary Dingle race in glorious conditions, where we had a lovely breeze from around the Skelligs on, and in the first race before that, where we were doing 9 or 10 knots consistently over the ground, knowing we were almost certain to win if nothing broke, and anticipating the fun and jingle.
Welcome by the Dolphin.
I don't think we're welcomed by the Dolphin on either occasion that we could see, but I can tell you that there's lots else to welcome you in Dingle, and I think there's no better place in which to finish any offshore race. However tired you may have felt before you came near land, you certainly cast it off very, very quickly when the delights of Dingle beckon you. And in fact, if you're going to win, as we were on each occasion and knew it, I think any tiredness you feel is very quick to disappear anyway. So we finished the race this time at 3:30 in the morning or thereabouts, but no one felt like going to bed at any stage. Eventually, as a bit of self-discipline, we did it because we had to go to a dinner for prize giving the following night, but it was something which you really needed to force yourself to do.
Congratulations again on your award. And if somebody is getting a crew together, maybe they're going to campaign for this year, what words of advice would you have for them?
Well, I think one of the very important things about getting a good crew is remembering that it is a team sport. I'm certainly not the best sailor in my crew. I'm not the second best sailor in my crew. One of the things which dogs, I think, a lot of boats, is the notion that if you happen to own the football, you should be playing centre forward. And somehow it seems to be conceived that if you're not helming the boat, you're somehow not doing the thing which makes you important. Nothing could be more untrue. The best teams work because the people who are best at doing given things do those things they're best at. So the best helm may be absolutely hopeless on the foredeck. They may be useless on navigation. They may be a useless tactician. And in the long run, teams function where everyone is doing something in circumstances where each other crew member knows that they are doing a really good job. And the boat will never function properly if you don't do that. So I'm lucky enough to have a whole series of people who've taught me a lot about things, and I can do most things but not everything on a boat, but that's far from saying that I can do them up to the standard required. So if you've a crew which is focused on that form of competition, then everybody gets massively more fun from doing something on something that works overall, and the race itself and everything that happens before and after the race generates much more enthusiasm, much more fun, and you get the pleasure of seeing something done properly.
Congratulations again to the Afloat magazine Irish Sailor of the Year, Paula Higgins. And if you thought you heard birdsong in the background with that interview, you did. We recorded it in a park, and the clunking sound you heard was me trying to deal with a 2 metre boom in the interests of social distancing. In other awards on the night, Malahide Yacht Club was the Irish Sailing Training Centre of the Year. The Irish Senior Sailing Instructor of the Year went to Sam Hennessy of Wicklow Sailing Club, and the President's Award went to Gary McMahon of the Island Project in West Cork, no stranger to the programme. We'll hear from people in Malahide Yacht Club next week. With the world in turmoil over COVID-19, this week saw fishermen block the entry of foreign trawlers to the piers of Dingle and Castletanbere. Fishermen say these crews have not been implementing the appropriate health practices to contain the spread of COVID-19, and their entering the harbours caused worries for the health of the towns. The fishermen insist that this is not a fishing issue, but a health concern. Noel Sweeney was at Dingle Pier for Seascapes, where he met fisherman Robert Brosnan, who was part of the blockade.
The pier here today looking fairly quiet, but we can't say it was so quiet over the last couple of days.
No, that's right, Noel. It hasn't been very quiet the last couple of days. All weekend the pier had been very busy with Spanish and French boats coming ashore. There was a lot of public concern regarding health and safety issues. They were walking up through the town, not practicing social distancing, walking into the shops, and a lot of people were very concerned, and we're still very concerned about what's coming down the tracks with this COVID-19. And we're trying to protect ourselves as best we can as a community. We have an elderly demographic here in Dingle. We have a nursing home, we have a daycare centre, and there's lots of elderly and vulnerable people not 50 yards from the top of the pier. There's somebody actually on a respirator. So we have a lot of concern regarding people from jurisdictions which are highly contaminated at the moment. And look, we feel so... We stand in solidarity with these people. There's hundreds upon hundreds of these people dying in their own countries, and it's heartbreaking to listen to. But we have a duty of care for our own community as well, Noel, here, and we have to protect our own people. And if we feel that the health and safety issues aren't being abided by, we have to take a stand. And as you know, there are no better people to take a stand when they can see imminent danger than the fishermen. Their lives are fraught with danger. The occupation they have, they're all the time trying to anticipate danger coming down the track. And a lot of these guys would have had had close escapes at sea, and a lot of these guys know what it's like to be in the mouth of a storm. And there is a storm coming our way, and these guys have anticipated it and acted accordingly in good faith for the good of the community. This is nothing else to do with it. It has nothing to do with fishing. It is a public health issue, and we feel very strongly that our concerns weren't being addressed by the authorities. I rang the sergeant yesterday. The sergeant informed me that he had no powers to tell these people to get back into their boats. The powers weren't there for the harbour master to do so either. No, there has been some developments, and hopefully we'll have some positive results out of it. But for the moment, we've highlighted the issue, and we've turned away a couple of boats yesterday that were trying to come ashore. If a member of the public flies into an airport, they're being asked to self-isolate for 14 days, yet somebody else from... if they're coming off a fishing boat, they're not asked to do so. So it's a total contradiction in terms to do this. We feel they should be quarantined. We don't know whether they have COVID or whether they'll pick it up in town, bring it back on the ships, and contaminate their own crew. We're really concerned for their welfare and ours, but it's contradictory. The terms are contradictory when you look at it that way. We can't see any sense in that sort of policy, giving exclusion to certain members and asking other members of the public to self-isolate for 14 days.
I understand there's a meeting about to take place between the harbour master here in Dingle and local fishermen, albeit quite casual. Do you know what they're going to discuss?
Well, it's all going to be surrounded by the health and safety again. It's concerns about disinfection. If these people, there is some talk about having exclusion zones and allowing them to land, but there'll have to be a lot of compromise with regard to health and safety. We feel they haven't adhered to what we've had to adhere to as a public here. Their own countries are in lockdown, and they're walking into a jurisdiction that have no powers, the Gardaí have no powers to penalise or fine people for not practising social distancing. So it needs to be sorted out, and hopefully something positive will come out of the meeting today.
Noel Sweeney on Dingle Pier. And as more trawlers are expected to land in the west of Ireland over the next few days, we'll keep an eye on the situation. The virus has meant that shipping worldwide is in a huge crisis. Richard Mead is the editor of Lloyd's List, who provide maritime intelligence information. I spoke to him earlier about what's happening in the shipping industry.
Like the rest of the economy, shipping has been deeply affected to its core by coronavirus. the shipping industry is often misunderstood a little in terms of the scope it plays in the global economy. You have to understand that the global shipping industry carries around 86-88% of global trade at some point or another. So when the cogs of globalization come to a halt, shipping comes to a halt with it. The shipping has been rocked to its core like everyone else.
One of the sectors most badly hit that we can see so far are passenger cruises.
Yes, certainly. I mean, the cruise lines obviously hit the headlines first, obviously in terms of the infection. The entire cruise industry came to a halt back in early March. There isn't really any cruise ship afloat right now with any passengers on. But probably the underreported implications for the ferry lines, and that has been significantly impacted. I think most of the northern European ferries carry a mixture of passengers and freight, and that really allows them to survive economically. If you take the passengers out of the equation, as most of them have, we've seen drops in passenger traffic, in excess of 75%, bordering on 100% in some cases, over the last month. Vehicle traffic is down more than 50%. So the companies that operate these passenger ferries are struggling economically. They are struggling to keep these things afloat. Many of them are trying to keep going because the freight services they provide are essential components to global trade. It is a real struggle for many of these companies, and certainly the likes of P&O Ferries and many of the European companies have seen significant layoffs. Significant amounts of their vessels are currently idled, due to lack of capacity and lack of people who actually run them.
And what about the normal cargo carriers who travel over long distance carrying a variety of cargo? Some of them, hundreds, thousands of them at sea at the moment.
Absolutely. I mean, the shipping industry broadly, you can split up into the containerized sector. That's the big boxes you see on the motorways, the 20-foot containers that keep the finished goods of the world going around. These are being hit significantly. Obviously, we saw the first impact of coronavirus in China, and the supply chain from China to Europe and West Coast US was hit significantly. But as we're now seeing the port activity in China ramp back up again as they recover, the problem is that European ports and U.S. ports are now unable to accept this. So we're seeing log jams in the system coming through. On the dry cargo side, this is the big sort of industrializing commodities that we think of, the iron ore, steel, coal. There are problems. I mean, we've seen the majority of the second quarter economic output eventually evaporate. The hope is that if the rest of the world follows Chinese infection curve there or thereabouts, we'll get back up running sometime in the third quarter. We're hoping that the fundamentals haven't disappeared and we're not looking at a structural shift in terms of some of this demand, but there is every possibility that we've just lost some of the demand and that will have a serious impact across the industry and its ability to keep going.
There then is the issue of oil tankers carrying crude oil around the world, and it's a cargo which is tumbling in value even as they are at sea.
The tanker situation is a very complex one. It is sparked by coronavirus in the sense that the OPEC agreements between the oil producing countries collapsed as a result of disagreements over coronavirus. But what we've seen is a complicated set of geopolitics hit a crisis that was already in the making. The decision of the Saudis to essentially flood the market with oil has seen the oil price collapse. That, in turn, created a huge amount of demand for the big tankers of the world to be taking this oil around at fairly cheap levels. That spiked freight rates initially to rates that we just haven't seen since the 1980s in the middle of the tanker wars.
Well, you mean the price of transport went up as
absolutely
oil came down?
The cost of how much it cost to effectively rent a tanker, the freight rates were spiking at around $300,000 a day only a few weeks ago. That's now collapsed to the tune of about 160-170% in the space of a few days. It is a very, very volatile situation, and tanker operators are making hay while the sun shines, in the sense that, you know, cheap oil is a boon for them. But it's a complicated picture that is going to play out depending on a number of macroeconomic factors. Now, what we're seeing is a number of tankers essentially being used for what we call floating storage. So you fill a tanker up with oil, what we call a VLCC, a very large crude carrier, can carry up to around 300,000 barrels of oil. And because the price of oil is so low, it pays to keep it on board a ship for a price that is expected to go up in the future. Oil is very cheap. It's being contained on ships, and we'll sort of see what happens next. Now, a lot depends on decisions by the Saudi government and how the infection curve of coronavirus pans out globally.
Richard Mead of Lloyd's List. And that's it for Seascapes for this week. We're back at the same time next Friday. Everything on the Program West podcast, it's on our website, rte.ie/seascapes. If you want to contact the programme or you have a comment or an event, send me an email, seascapes@rte.ie. If you're on or off the water over the next week, be safe.